Bill Owens, you got a new district now. What did you gain? What did you lose? What are the political implications?
Well, first, unfortunately, we lost Madison County and Oswego County and the portion of Oneida County that we had. The district now includes Lewis County, Jefferson County, St. Lawrence, Franklin, Clinton, Essex, Washington, Warren, the northern half of Saratoga, Fulton County, Hamilton County, and the northern piece of Herkimer County. So we picked up, if you will, the last group that I mentioned. We picked up an additional 2,000 square miles, so we go from 14,000 to 16,000 square miles, clearly the largest district in New York and the second largest east of the Mississippi. So we've picked up a lot of new friends, and we're going to have to get around and meet them and let them get to know Bill Owens.
And how do you do that?
Well, you spend time in the car, going from place to place, meeting with people, being introduced to them, having conversations, in some cases renewing old friendships of people that I've known in the past. And this is a process that will simply continue really right through the election. And if I'm fortunate enough to be reelected, we'll continue the process after that.
Now, you are what was some people might call a blue dog Democrat, meaning that you're, you know, for a Democrat, you're a fairly conservative guy. And of course, you have a Republican district or many Republicans in your district. Is partisanship important? In other words, is the way in which somebody is registered important?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting question. And I think that there have been a number of studies done, and I come out very close to the center in Congress. The most recent numbers that we looked at show that I voted with Republicans about 38% of the time. What I believe is that you vote on the issue, how it impacts your district, and how it impacts the country. And that's the process I go through, not a partisan one. And I think that that's very important, and I think that more people should do that, to be quite frank with you.
Let me talk to you a little bit about Iran and Israel. Things have quieted a little bit, but there is still this worry on the parts of many people that the Iranian thing could explode. What are you hearing?
Well, I think we all share that concern, is that something could trigger a confrontation in Iran, and that would be a very, very dangerous thing, not just for Israel, but for the entire Middle East and the entire world. You know, we have a lot of things going on right now. You have the North Koreans setting off an intercontinental ballistic missile, which didn't work, but that doesn't mean they're not going to keep trying. We've had, you know, Iran struggling to get to nuclear capacity. We have a lot of issues that are very difficult and tricky, if you will, to monitor and control and influence. I think the conversations that happened in Iran with Iran earlier this month are a very good sign, and hopefully will continue to move, if you will, towards a negotiated settlement with Iran. I mean, clearly, that's the direction we need to go.
But if it doesn't, would you ever see us, and you mentioned Korea, getting into an armed conflict with either of those actors?
Obviously, you can never say never. Not my preference. I think that we have expended a tremendous number of lives and a tremendous amount of money over the last 10 years in Iraq and Afghanistan. I think we need to find other ways, not dissimilar to the way in which Libya was handled. I think we need to have fewer boots on the ground throughout the world. I think that that doesn't mean you decrease your capacity to act, but I think you need to show more restraint in acting, because I don't think that that's going to work long term. And I think the stress on the force is showing, and I don't blame anybody for that. I simply blame this very prolonged period of intense war, deployments, serious injuries, negative impact on families, all of those things.
We have a defense industry in this country. Eisenhower warned us about it. And there are those who think that in order to make it go, you've got to continue to have conflict. Anything to that?
Well, I'm not sure you have to have conflict. First of all, I think that because of the nature of what we're doing now, the level of sophistication in the technology, that we can have a very healthy defense industry without necessarily having an ongoing conflict.
But when we're balancing the budget, and there was a budget agreement, we said we're going to take a lot out of domestic spending, we're going to take a lot out of the Pentagon. Now we see the pushback from those forces saying maybe we don't mind the domestic, particularly among the Republicans, but we don't want to leave the United States unprepared. But really, it's a do-over. What do you make of that?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, but I think everybody anticipated this.
Sure.
I don't think there was anybody who thought that this would go forward as originally laid out in the Budget Control Act, because we all knew that there would be folks who would be very supportive of defense, there would be folks who would be very supportive of domestic spending. And now we're starting to see, I think, some actual serious conversation when you look at, the Ryan budget, the Van Hollen budget, the president's budget. You're starting to see serious conversations about how to resolve the Budget Control Act issues and to do something, in my view, that in reality would be responsible. I mean, I voted for the Budget Control Act. I think cutting $1.2 trillion was very important, but we can find other ways to do that. And we also have to seriously look at increased revenue. I mean, that there is nobody, no serious economist. The Simpson-Bowles Group, Rivlin-Domenici, all have said that you have to have a mixture of cuts and revenue. And clearly, I think we're probably going to lean towards the cutting side in terms of the percentage, if you will, but we have to have additional revenue.
Jumping to another place, Bill Owens, I haven't got to you that much longer. The Supreme Court is about to let us know what they think about states passing immigration laws. And I know you got a lot of farmers in your district, and I know they hurt when they can't get people to work on the farms. How does that all work out?
Well, that's absolutely right, Alan. And, you know, there's a huge disconnect in the country between what we need in terms of immigrant labor, how important it is on the farms. We had a hearing up in Saranac Lake, one of the four, for the farm bill. And we had a great comment from a farmer who lives a little bit south of Albany. Import the labor or import the food. I think that sums it up.
Are people listening?
Well, I would say that a substantial number of people are listening. It's unfortunately just not the right people on the other side of the aisle who are listening. And we have some very unrealistic approaches to these issues that do not get to the root cause or the root solution. Let me put it to the root solution. People are not thinking their way through this. They're letting ideology and scare tactics overrule their reason.
So when you put up an intellectual construct like making sure there are enough people working on the farm so that people get their food against what you call the fear factor, those immigrants are coming over the line and they're going to get you. People still divided on that.
They certainly are. It's a serious issue, and people are just not doing the kind of intellectual analysis they need to do to first understand the problem and then to seek out solutions.
And there you are at the Canadian border.
That's right.
Well, Bill Owens, it's always a great joy for me to be able to talk to you. You're bright and you speak straight out, and I understand everything you say, which is not always the case, and I appreciate it very much.
All right. Thanks, Alan. Always love talking to you.